dawn we arrived in Auschwitz.
Suddenly the train stopped, the doors were pulled open, and outside they shouted, "Raus, raus, out, out!"
We heard a lot of German voices yelling orders outside, and then the cattle car doors opened. Thousands of people poured out of the cattle car onto a little strip of land called the selection platform. My mother grabbed my twin sister and me by the hand, hoping that we were her youngest children. So as long as she could hold on to us, maybe she could protect us. Everything was moving very fast. I was on the selection platform maybe 10 minutes. In my childish curiosity, I looked around, tried to figure out what that place was. And as I looked around, I realized that my father and two older sisters were gone. I never ever saw them again. We were stiff, we could hardly walk because it was by that time minus 20 degrees. And lots of people got frostbite, couldn't walk. The SS came in with their big dogs and truncheons and were herding us out of the railway trains. And there we stood on the side of a goods train outside Riga. Our hand luggage we had to put in one heap, and the wind was howling. And the ice was on the road and snow. And we had to, in rows of five, we had to march towards the Riga ghetto, but we didn't know where we were going. SS men with rifles and truncheons and big dogs were accompanying us. And with loud hailers, they were saying, "Who is not able to walk? Old people and mothers with children, you don't have to walk any further. There are some vans waiting for you. You go onto these lorries and you meet your loved ones soon again." We found out later that 3 days before we arrived, they killed 30,000 Latvian Jews, which came from Riga and the surrounding towns into the ghetto. They herded them into the Bikany forest that's outside Riga, where previously the Russian prisoners of war had dug graves for them. They had to undress completely, sorted out their clothes, their top clothes, their underwear, their shoes, all in neat order. They had to leave, and then they had to go to the edge of the pits, and they were mown down with machine guns. And later on, we were told that farmers nearby said that the soil was moving for days afterwards, because people that fell into these pits were not dead, not all of them.
remember there was a sort of autumn mist when we arrived, and there were these slits in the boards. And when we looked through this mist, when sun suddenly came up, it was a lovely sun, and we suddenly realized we were in a camp. And we became terribly afraid, and the fear sort of passed from man to wife to child. And suddenly we could smell the smell of fear inside the compartment. And people didn't speak very much. Some of them prayed, and some just hugged the closest, the nearest and dearest.
Then they lined us up for registration and tattooing. And when my turn came, I decided to give them as much trouble as a 10-year-old could. So four people restrained me, two Nazis and two women prisoners. Well, they took a pen-like gadget, they heated it over the flame of a lamp. The pen-like had a regular, then a needle about that long. And when the needle got hot, they dipped it into ink, and then they burned into my left arm, dot by dot, the capital letter A-7063. My twin sister Miriam became capital A-7064.
So Menge came around to the block and asked that the rope in the middle should be put on longitudinally. We were on one side of the rope. He came with his officers and he said, "I'm going to ask you to do something and you have to do it exactly what I tell you." And the head of the block had to shout what Mengele said, because he didn't want to strain himself. He spoke softly and he shouted. So each time he repeated again like an echo.
One day, we stopped in a village. They took two wagons, put the girls, ill girls, on the wagons, and we had to push them in the forest, and they finished them off. It was better for them. One day Mengele came, and we had to stand, all 1,000 women, on one side of the chimney. He stands with two SS men near the door. That must have been September 44. We have to undress ourselves. We held our clothes on our arms. He takes you by the hand, front and back. One goes back on the other side of the block, and one goes outside. Now, which one is which one? We were going outside, and we're looking behind. Which one are they going? The one which are fatter or the ones which are very slim? So, what do? We can't do nothing. We have to go. They took us to a shower. Now, what is going to come out? Is it going to come out water or gas? So we're holding our hands and praying to God. Water came out.
The misfortune of the Greek girls were that they did not know any other language that may be Jewish or Greek, and none of them, as I can remember, knew any German, which made their life a double misery, because you had to understand what the shouting was all about, and the shouting went on only in German. I remember the Greek girls who were at that time still quite beautiful because they were just fresh arrivals. And I remember how they were singing beautiful songs, and they didn't last long. Not only the lack of food and hard work, but the climate took their toll, and they perished extremely quickly. One day when that, unfortunately, one of those Greek girls was so ill, she still went with commando out, and she fallen somewhere in the ditch, and she was half dead already, but she didn't march into the camp. Nobody spotted her. The whole camp has been standing for 3 hours or more, and the posses went out to search for that missing person. And in the end, when they found her, they dragged her into the camp and they set dogs on her. And this is how she died. And that was the day I spat into the face of my God.